Wake up, everyone. It's time for the Steve Noble Show, where biblical Christianity meets the everyday issues of life in your home, at work, and even in politics. Steve is an ordinary man who believes in an extraordinary God, and on his show, there's plenty of grace and lots of truth, but no sacred cows. Call Steve now at 866-34-TRUTH. That's 866-34-TRUTH. Or check him out online at thestevenobleshow.com. And now, here's your host, Steve Noble.
Yes, as a matter of fact, this is Steve Noble, live 5x5 in the studio on November 2nd, 2018. We had all kinds of issues yesterday. I think we found some workarounds, so we should be good today. So glad that I'm here. Glad that I'm live, alive, period, and live on the show. We're going to thank you to Jenna Ellis, who's called back in. I'll get to her in just a second. The director of public policy for the James Dobson Family Institute, who's a constitutional law attorney and a contributor to Washington Examiner, Daily Wire, and The Federalist, and has done a bunch of stuff on TV, because we started to have this conversation the other day and was looking forward to getting Jenna's expert opinion on Trump's move here, which is coming out of the ground about reversing what we've done with the 14th Amendment and birthright citizenship, otherwise known as anchor babies. So I want to get back to that because, of course, everybody on the left is he's just one more reason to think he's the spawn of Satan. What a horrible thing to do for these babies that are born here, to not allow them to be a U.S. citizen. So we'll talk about that. Back to the movie reviews earlier today. I took a chance and I knew that maybe there'd be some things about this particular movie that would bug me, but I'm willing to go sit into things and have conversations and engage in a topic where I think it's going to be one-sided. But I went to see a movie called The Hate U Give, which is based on a book that did very, very well, and it's all about a young unarmed black man being shot by a white cop. So as soon as I say that, I know where your mind's going. And sometimes my mind goes there, too, but I'm a much better listener today than I was 5 years ago. And so I went to see that movie. I'll talk about that in the second segment. And then if you ever want to blame somebody for, well, I guess me being in the public realm and being on the radio and being an activist, you can blame Mark Harris for Congress. So he's a buddy of mine, was a pastor for years, a great, fabulous pastor, but has always had a heart for politics, and he's running for Congress in a really tough race down in Charlotte, North Carolina. A great man of God, a great conservative, so we're going to spend the second half of the show with him talking about all kinds of stuff. But he came to a church once where I was going here in Raleigh, which turned me into an activist. God used him to turn me into an activist, which opened the door up for radio eventually. So we'll get to Mark Harris in the second half of the show. But we're getting over to Jenna Ellis. Jenna, thanks so much for calling back and helping us out with this. I really appreciate it.
Yeah, thank you so much for having me on. It's great to be with you.
Well, it's so nice, and what a pleasant surprise to actually hear your voice. So that's a cool thing. All right, so let's dive right into this because, you know, constitutional law attorney, and a lot of people, Jenna, I think just because we react emotionally, we believe the headlines or the clickbait. But when it comes to birthright citizenship and anchor babies, help us try to understand kind of the history of this and what's going on now, because some articles are going to say this is terrible. And then another one I've got right in front of me from the New York Post, revoking birthright citizenship would enforce the Constitution. So, Jenna, which is it?
Right. Well, from a policy standpoint, certainly Congress has the ability to establish the Uniform Rule of Immigration and Naturalization. And so how we allow certain people to come into our country, like the caravan issue, all of those things, is absolutely up to Congress and it's up to our country. And so the 14th Amendment then becomes the question of whether or not people who are here as children of illegal parents, so they didn't actually break the law themselves. They were born here with no will of their own to break the law. Do they have a constitutional right to citizenship? And that goes back to 1787 with the original Constitution, where the term citizen is in several places of the Constitution, but our founding fathers didn't actually define what it means to be a citizen. So then the 14th Amendment was part of the Reconstruction era after the Civil War, dealing with the newly freed slaves and establishing what their legal rights were under the Constitution. And so the 14th Amendment has this language that does define citizenship. And it says for persons born and naturalized, but also they have to be subject to the jurisdiction thereof. And that's really the question, Steve, that everyone is contemplating. What does that mean? Well, the Supreme Court has never actually reached that specific issue for children of illegal immigrants. So from a constitutional standpoint, it is an open question. But if we go back and we look at the legislative history of what was going on in the 1860s when this amendment was ratified, they specifically dealt with in Congress the fact that they were not talking about people who were here that did not have a sovereign and express and only exclusive sovereign power and obligation and duty and allegiance to the United States. So, for example, they excluded Native Americans and Indians that are in the reservations because they're not under exclusive allegiance to the United States. And there is also one case that does touch on this issue, not directly, because it dealt with a child born to permanent residents, so who had legal status from China. But this is the important point. They're talking about, in this case, and it's the United States versus Wong Kim Ark, and it talks about children born within the realm of foreign ambassadors or children of alien enemies born during and within their hostile occupation were not natural-born citizens because not born within the allegiance, the obedience, or the power, or, as we would say to this day, within the jurisdiction. So I think that that particular phrasing of the Supreme Court case, as well as all the legislative history, gives a very good argument that there is no constitutional right to birthright right. citizens for children of illegal immigrants. But if Congress does want to extend it in the law, they certainly could by statute.
Yeah, and there's not. This isn't a mystery in terms of when this took place. This was all during the Civil War, 14, 15, 16 Amendment. We're all in that area. But Senator Jacob Howard, who was in fact the author of the Citizenship Clause, attempted. I'm reading from this article. Attempted to assure skeptical colleagues that the language was not intended to make Indians citizens of the United States because Indians were not subject to the jurisdiction of the U.S. because they, at that time, still owed their allegiance to their tribes and not the U.S. He actually said this. This is a specific quote trying to deal with that. The senator said, who was the author of the amendment, persons born in the United States who are foreigners, aliens, who belong to the families of ambassadors or foreign ministers, they're excluded. We're not talking about them. And I think that's been the big challenge here. I'm up against the break. Jenna, can I hold you through the commercial? Do you have a couple more minutes?
Sure, yes.
You're welcome. And I'm going to put you on hold. We'll come back and talk to Jenna Ellis, who's the Director of Public Policy for the James Dobson Family Institute. Most of you know Dr. Dobson when he was with Focus on the Family, and he's still very active. She's a constitutional attorney. A few more questions on this issue of anchor babies, and then we'll turn the corner. I'll talk about a fairly inflammatory movie that I saw earlier today. We'll Welcome back. It's Steve Noble, the Steve Noble Show, talking about this this issue that's bubbling up and will blow up in the coming days and more so over the weekend as Donald Trump, President Trump, is going down this road of dealing with anchor babies, which flows out of a really bad interpretation, a loose interpretation, a skewed interpretation of the 14th Amendment, which says all persons born or naturalized in the United States and subject to the jurisdiction thereof are citizens of the United States and of the state wherein they reside. So an illegal immigrant comes over, then they get pregnant or they're pregnant already. They have a baby in the state of Arkansas and boom, based on the 14th Amendment, because you were born in America, you are now an American citizen. So transfer that to anything outside of the illegal immigrant. Let's say it's an ambassador's wife and they're over here and then boom, does that mean the ambassador's child is now an American citizen? That's a bit problematic. Or somebody that's over here on a visa and they overstay their visa, or they're over here on a work visa. And then, boom, they have a baby, and then what do you do with that? But originally, this was really one of the concerns was, are you going to force American Indians who do not want to be under the jurisdiction because they're living on Indian reservations, they don't want to be under the jurisdiction of the United States, and that's why you have to go back to the original reading to really understand. And the context, which is super important, is you should know that if you're a Christian, because context is king in the Bible, too. Talking to Jenna Ellis, the Director of Public Policy for the James Dobson Family Institute and a constitutional attorney. Is this just, Jenna, is the problem here that this kind of conversation is just above most people's heads?
Well, I think the problem here is that you have such extreme extremely divided political parties. I mean, you have on one hand President Trump, who's really wanting to raise this issue to the national stage. And I think he's done that very well, because this has been the biggest topic in media over the past week. And he's kind of forcing the issue with a Democratic Party who may possibly take control of the House next week, which is, by the way, why the Dobson Policy Center has definitely been encouraging all Christians and faith-based Christians to get out and vote.
Amen.
And make sure that our values are definitely protected, because you have such a divided country. And if the Democrats do retain or win control of the House, we're going to see this type of thing, particularly on immigration, completely stagnate. They are not going to want to work with President Trump to come to common sense policy solutions on this. And so you have only one party now in America that is willing to be strong on national security, strong on protecting our borders, and understanding that, you know, this Constitution was ratified for ourselves, the people who do have allegiance to the United States, right, and our posterity, our children, and the heritage that we have in this country.
So how do those on the left then take that, the clause in there, subject to the jurisdiction thereof, how do they then apply that to an anchor baby?
Well, you know, in a variety of ways. One, they would say that, well, you know, that the Reconstruction era doesn't matter because, of course, we have a living constitution. We can now, you know, if we can define gender, meaning that, you know, I as a woman can go tomorrow and identify as a man, and, you know, being a born female with anatomy and biology that says that, if we can redefine that,
right,
we can
right.
really redefine anything. So they just go in and they make those terms functionally meaningless, and that is so dangerous to the law, because the law has to have legitimacy, it has to have consistency, it has to have
right.
rationality, and we have to be able to apply it predictably.
Yeah, and when you don't do that, you don't have the rule of law, it's just chaos, and then it really leans towards tyranny, because then who gets to make the definition of these various words and clauses? It's those that are in power, and then they can redefine to do whatever they want to. That was the whole abuse of power that our founding fathers were well aware of.
Right,
in the first
and
a lot of people
as well will think that subject to the jurisdiction, because we only are aware of that term, you know, maybe watching Law and Order or some of these, you know, shows on television.
Right.
I think jurisdiction is only being hailed into court. And so that would mean, you know, anyone that is just subject to the court jurisdiction. But that doesn't make sense, because if I as an American citizen go and travel abroad, I'm subject to the court jurisdiction if I break the law in another country. Does
right.
that mean that my citizenship now is abrogated or in question? I mean, that just doesn't even make sense. So from a common sense standpoint, looking at the legislative history, everything surrounding the intent of the 14th Amendment, the Democrats really don't have a very good position here. But it all really will come down to policy. And it'll come down to what Congress and the Supreme
yeah.
Court are firmly listening. Do we want to protect our borders or not?
Yeah, what a great point. Jenna, thanks so much for calling in. Thanks for being patient with us. I appreciate it. I look forward to having you on again.
Yeah, sounds good. Thank you so much for having me.
All right. Awesome. Thanks, Jenna. Have a great week, and we'll talk to you soon. And that's the deal. That's the problem. If you lose control of Congress and they just start redefining things in the Constitution, well, that's so old. We don't live in the Reconstruction era anymore. But to her last point, remember, so you go over to you're visiting Europe or whatever. You're going to school over there. Are you done being a U.S. citizen? You're not. That's why we call them illegal immigrants. So when the illegal immigrant comes across the border, whichever one, east, west, north, south, doesn't matter, they don't automatically become a U.S. citizen who is then subject to the jurisdiction as a U.S. citizen. That doesn't apply. Does that make sense? So when you go to another country, you're not all of a sudden French because you went to visit Paris. And so that's where it's utterly ridiculous. And we'll see. I really appreciate Trump's willing to go down this road. It is a huge draw for illegal immigration. Get over here, get a baby, have a baby on American soil. That baby's a citizen, and then bam, we'll be able to stay. There's no way they'll throw us out because Americans are nice and they're not going to split up a family. And while that may be true, we still have to have the rule of law. So that's why it's such an important topic. Okay, so earlier today, and we'll talk to Mark Harris for Congress, and I'll explain a little bit about my association with him, because he came to my church back in 2004. And just preached the roof off the place. And that's what turned me into a Christian activist just 3 weeks later, which eventually led to a lot of media stuff and eventually getting on the radio. So Mark has a very dear and important place in my life. And he's running for Congress in Charlotte, North Carolina. And it's going to be great to talk to him. This is a man of God. He was a pastor for years, very conservative, the type of people that we need up in Washington, D.C. So we'll have a wide-ranging conversation with him after the break. But I went to see this movie earlier today, The Hate U Give. Now, a lot of quite frankly, I'm just going to be brutally honest here. I think a lot of white conservatives would never go anywhere near this movie. It was a very successful book. It's turned into a movie, and it's all about the young, unarmed black man that gets shot by a white cop. And then you're talking Black Lives Matter and supporting the police. And so it's such a polarizing, divided issue that most people won't even bother to just say, oh, no, I know what the deal is here. But see, that's our problem, is we're not willing to wade into the muddy water. We're not willing to go into the uncomfortable places together with, yes, I'll use the phrase, an open mind, and willing to listen and consider. And for me, when I go into these types of issues, whether it's on the radio or going to see The Hate U Give, I realize I have a certain handicap because obviously I'm not black. And I also know that I bring a certain predisposition to it because of my own upbringing and my own experience. So I realize that I can't relate to nor see things from that perspective. So I kind of wear that openly when I walk in and know, like I said, I'm a bit handicapped in that regard. So that's where I have to be really careful with these things. So I went in there, and whereas, you know, just about all the law enforcement except one particular guy who happened to be African-American came across poorly, it still kind of takes you into the situation, and it allowed me to kind of think through things. So I disagreed with some things, and some other things I'm like, yeah, I can see how in the African-American community where you can start to paint with a pretty broad brush. And I think they did that often in this movie, The Hate U Give. It wasn't terrible. I think it was a decent movie. There was some pretty good acting. The young girl that plays, it's her best friend that dies in the car. He's reaching into the car. He's grabbing a hairbrush. And the cop, thinking he's grabbing something, when he turns around with the hairbrush, he shoots him and kills him right there in front of his best friend. So very tough. But the thing about it, and the reason I would want you to go see it, is just to force you to think more fully through the issues, to look at it from the other side, depending on what color you are. And to be able to consider and think. But at the bottom line, all of it, it's not The Hate U Give, it's the hate we all give. Welcome back. It's Steve Noble, The Steve Noble Show. Great to be with you, broadcasting live here in Wake Forest outside of Raleigh, North Carolina. North Carolina being the state, I've lived in 8 states. This is the longest I've lived anywhere. We moved here in 1997. But we're talking to people in 12 different states. So even though my next guest is North Carolinian and is running for Congress in North Carolina down in the Charlotte area, the reason he's running and the things he believes in, because Mark Harris was a pastor for years and years and years, a man of God. Government has always been something that's loomed on his radar screen. He was originally going in that direction, and then God called him into the ministry. He's one of my favorite pastors. But in 2004, just to give you a little background, in 2004, the church I was going to here in Raleigh, North Carolina, we were having kind of a 6-month program, and it was all about the road to Emmaus. It was called Hearts on Fire, and then it was going to end in a revival. Well, me growing up in Presbyterian and Methodist churches, I heard the word revival. I'm thinking, you know, three-piece suit and maybe a bad comb-over, and there may or may not be blood. I don't know. But I had no interest in going. But our pastor leaned on me, and my wife was out of town, so I had two of our kids at the time. The third one was down in the nursery. And so I go, okay, fine, I'll go check it out. So Friday night, that's the first time I heard Mark Harris preach. It was Saturday night when he preached out of Nehemiah 2:17, which said, "Behold, Jerusalem lies in ruins, and its gates have been burned with fire. Come, let us rebuild the walls and remove our disgrace." And then he talked about the state of the nation. And that night, I understood the disgrace that I deserved because I was apathetic. I was only taking care of me, myself, and I, and my family. I didn't care about my neighbors, really, politically speaking. I didn't really care all that much about the country. And God used Mark Harris to change all that. And that's when 3 weeks later, I walked into a Raleigh City Council chambers with 350 other people that we organized and became an activist. And 3 years later, got on the radio. And then here we are today, nationally syndicated. So if you don't like me, if you got a problem with me, blame Mark Harris. How you doing, buddy?
Man, I'm doing great, Steve. How are you doing?
I'm doing wonderful. It's so good to hear your voice. I'm so excited for you and so proud of you keeping your nose to the grindstone and trying to help not just the people in North Carolina, but people all over this country, because when you're in Congress, you're going to have that kind of impact. So how's it going? And tell everybody, kind of share. I know enough about your story, Mark, but share that how you've always had this burden for our nation and for getting eventually into the world of politics. So how did that work, and why? How do you feel that God has called you into this, and why?
Well, as you said, I've had a burden for our nation for a long time, and probably when I had stepped into the role of president of the North Carolina Baptist State Convention in the fall of 2011, is when the marriage amendment came out of the legislature and was going to be on the ballot in the spring of 2012. And you and others across the state had worked so diligently to get the marriage amendment on the ballot. And I found myself being encouraged and challenged to step into a leadership role to help form Vote for Marriage NC, along with Tammy Fitzgerald, the North Carolina Values Coalition executive director, and others from across the state. And so as a result of that marriage amendment process, where the North Carolinians voted 61%, 39% to make traditional marriage part of our state constitution, I just really discovered such a vacuum of leadership. And then in the midst of that, was invited to come and speak at the Family Research Council in Washington, D.C., and it was a program called Watchmen on the Wall. And to be honest, I spoke for about 40 minutes at one session of a three-day event, and I left there with a lot more after those 3 days than anything I delivered in 40 minutes. And that was challenged, convicted, called, whatever you want to put it, to recognize the role that spiritual leaders had played in the founding of this country, and became convicted that, you know, I had become somewhat comfortable in a zone, and that I needed to step up and really take responsibility and be that spiritual leader, and that involved in the public arena. And so I got involved. I couldn't ask people to do something I wasn't willing to do myself. So I felt led to take that step of faith and run for office. And here we are now, 2018, won the primary in May for the 9th Congressional District. And we are in the fight of our lives right now with this election looming come Tuesday.
Yeah, and that was the primary was a tough fight because you were going against an incumbent Republican, and you eked out a victory there, and God was moving. And then right now, of course, a very, very difficult race, 9th District in North Carolina down in Charlotte, and kind of moving east from there. MarkHarrisForCongress.com is Mark's website, MarkHarrisForCongress.com. And how do you, when you meet people and they're like, okay, Mr. Harris and Pastor Harris, how many people still call you Pastor Harris, by the way? Because that's who you are to
a
me.
Lot.
I don't know what I'll do when you win. I'll just call you Congressman Pastor Mark Harris. I don't know. I'll figure it out.
There you go.
But when people are like, what do you stand for, Mark? I mean, how do you kind of boil that down for people?
Well, you know, for me as an individual, I tell them all the time that I am a believer, a follower of Christ, and I am a pastor. And I don't think I'll ever lose my pastor's heart, and I certainly hope I don't. But I think it really puts me in a unique position to be able to represent the citizens of the 9th District in the U.S. House of Representatives because, you know, any of the issues that we face in our day and time, they're just real-life issues that, as a pastor, I faced for 30 years with individuals within our congregation. And it was as Governor Mike Huckabee said, you know, if you do a pathology report on the culture today, for every issue that we face in this country, Mark Harris can put a name and a face with those issues, and he's right. And so when you look at what I stand for, I'm a conservative. I do hold a biblical worldview. I'm an individual who believes in limited government. I believe in lower taxes. I believe that people have the far better ability to manage their own money than the government has to manage it for them. So I really believe that we need to uphold our religious liberty and our First Amendment and all of those principles that are critically important. And perhaps chief among them is the right to life, and have stood for the rights of unborn. And for me, you know, sometimes when they're talking about issues that are important to you in various things, it's interesting, Steve, because a lot of times it just doesn't come to my mind, the whole life issue, because for me, it's not a political football. It's been a lifestyle. I mean,
yeah.
Beth and I were at the march with James Dobson back around 1990, 91, when he called a million people to stand. And so we know what it is to stand with life chain and pray along the road. We know what it is to be involved in a crisis pregnancy center, and Beth has served on the board. And we know what it is to stand out in front of an abortion clinic and pray and be a prayerful presence for God to change the heart and mind of someone stepping in. So to go through with something like that. So we see that not as a political football, but that's just who we are and standing for the right of the unborn.
And I think one of the stories that I love, because you were down at First Baptist Charlotte, which Mark was not the Mark and Beth were not pastoring and leading a church as out in the suburbs. They were in downtown Charlotte and right next door, really, really close to you guys, some really tough neighborhoods. And here we are just a few weeks out from Thanksgiving. I always remember learning about, because you would tell people in your congregation, here's the size of canned beans you're going to bring. Here's the weight of the turkey you're going to bring. So you've been down there. And I love Huckabee's point on that. You've ministered to people that most of whom are probably on the other side of the political aisle. But talk about that, Mark, because I think that's super important from a pastor's perspective going into Congress, that you don't talk about those issues because you were a pastor. You were living in those areas where people would be mostly diametrically opposed politically, but you're there serving and loving and caring about people. I think it's important to share that.
Well, and that is. That's a really a ministry and a program that we have done through the years in the churches that I've been privileged to pastor. And God placing me in a downtown situation as pastor, it was a perfect fit. We called it Feeding of the 5,000, where individuals in our congregation brought all of the items that would make up a Thanksgiving dinner, from the turkey to the green beans to the yams to the rolls to a dessert. And then we would just invite people. We would go out into those areas, neighborhoods, and share with folks to come to a service. And on the Tuesday before Thanksgiving, we would just have a service, fill up the sanctuary, just have great music and worship. I would just preach a message that would share the gospel and invite people to come to Christ. And then we would, as everybody was leaving, they would actually pick up their box of food that would feed a family of five, wherein we said, knew if we had 1,000 families represented there, that's how we called it, the Feeding of the 5,000. It was an exciting thing we have done each year and just very blessed by it.
Yeah, and that's what I think is so important. Again, we're talking to Mark Harris, who's running for Congress in the 9th District of North Carolina, which is down in Charlotte, and then heading a little bit east as you follow the state line there with South Carolina. It's so important because we have a lot of politicians on both sides that talk about doing things and helping people in different ways to do that, but most of them do not have the kind of down-in-the-dirt and down-in-the-streets experience that somebody like Mark does, doing it obviously in the name of the Lord, but that heart is there. It doesn't matter whether he's in a pulpit or he's in the halls of Congress. He's going to take that with him. We're coming up on a break, Mark. Can I hold you through the commercial break? And then I've got some questions for you. I want to talk about the Trump rally last week and a couple other things. Is that all right with you?
Sure. I'd love to do that.
All right, pal. I'm going to put you on hold. We'll be right back with Mark Harris running for Congress in the 9th District. MarkHarrisForCongress.com. And if you haven't figured it out, if I lived there, I would definitely be voting for him. And I would restrain myself since I used to live in Chicago and I'd only vote once. It's just a joke. Everybody chill out. I love Mark Harris. This is Steve Noble. We'll be right back.
All my life I've been searching for something. Something never comes, never leads to nothing. Nothing satisfies, but I'm getting closer to the prize at the end of the rope.
Closer to that prize at the end of the rope. If you're a follower of Jesus Christ, you know what that prize is. You already have it. You're just not there yet. That's eternal life and absent from the body, present with the Lord. Eventually, the heaven comes down to earth, and man, it's awesome. But there's some prizes that we can have now as we follow the Lord in obedience and those blessings. And one of the prizes I would like to see happen, especially next Tuesday, is to see a mentor and a leader in my life and somebody that God used to really alter the direction of my life. And if you like listening to me on the radio or anything else, if you are encouraged or challenged, if there's any positive fruit off my tree at all, it all started with a guy named Mark Harris, who was a pastor who came to my church and just preached a message that I feel like God custom made for me. And it drove me out of my apathy to become an activist. And that opened the door to media, which opened the door to radio, which also opened the door to the Harvest Crusades and working with Greg Laurie. And Mark Harris has worked with them before. And so Mark Harris is not just somebody I want to see anybody in the 9th District of North Carolina run in Congress, elect him and vote for him. But he's somebody that I value personally and spiritually because he's had just an enormous impact on my life. And again, Mark, I know how busy you are. Thanks so much for calling in today.
Oh, thank you for having me, Steve. Man, you're a great encourager of mine, brother.
Well, that's definitely a two-way street. So not everybody that I know gets to hang out with the president. And so he comes to town last week. That must have been pretty wild. I've never been to one of his rallies, but it sure looks like a pretty wild time. So I wanted to ask you, what was that like? And then a lot of us evangelicals will get a bad rap because I voted for Donald Trump myself. There's plenty of things about our president, both before he was the president and now, that I don't always agree with. I don't always like his style, but I don't believe pragmatism is a sin. And I'd be curious to see kind of your take on Donald Trump. I know you support him. I do as well. And then the rally last week.
Well, yes, last week was actually phenomenal. When he had offered to come and do a rally for us, we were thrilled. It's actually his second visit he had made on behalf of our campaign. He came back on the Friday before Labor Day and did a fundraiser for myself and wow. Congressman Ted Budd over in District 13, because both of our districts have been pinpointed and targeted by the left to try to flip from Republican to Democrat seats so that they can give the gavel to Nancy Pelosi and make her speaker again. And so he came and announced he was coming in on Friday night. We were just thrilled. We were invited to come out to the air base to meet Air Force One.
Wow.
And we had the privilege of doing that. And I'll never forget, Beth and I were standing there along with Congressman Budd and his wife.
I lost you there,
Chris. I remember looking at Beth and saying, you know, I don't think my mom and dad would have ever imagined
wow.
that we'd be standing right here. And she said, you know, I had that same thought, but I thought I've got to get rid of that thought or we're both going to cry. And, and she was right. We would have. But he came down the steps for us to greet him, and totally unbeknownst to us, he just said, look, he said, why don't y'all just get in the car with me and ride with me to the to the rally. And so we had an opportunity, about 30 minutes of uninterrupted time.
Wow. I'm losing you a little bit. You still there, Mark? Hey, so, all right, so,
yes.
All right, yeah, I lost the cell signal a little. One question there. So you spent 30 minutes with President Trump, and that's a President Trump that the left media and most of the mainstream media will never let out of the bag. So what was your impression of him with that personal time that you had in the big limo?
You know, he is so down to earth. I mean, the genius of why people are just fascinated and why people are excited about this president moving this country forward is because he just relates to people. And he, we had just general conversation. He wanted to know about our races and what was happening in them and what our challenges were. And obviously he had on his mind at that particular time the arrest of the alleged pipe bomber that night.
Sure.
And he was very concerned for what was happening there, and that was weighing heavy on him. And so, quite frankly, it was just a great conversation about things in general, and he's very, very down to earth. And we were impressed and felt very comfortable in our conversations with him. And I get what you were saying. As an evangelical pastor, that probably is the number one question I've gotten on the campaign trail from media,
sure.
Down to individuals, is how do you square being a pastor and supporting this president? And I made it perfectly clear that, you know, I had to make a decision in 2016 in the fall because I looked at where we were as a country, and I knew presidential elections come and go, but the decision that was going to be made in that presidential election would be a 40-year decision because of the Supreme Court and because of just where our country was in so many ways.
Yeah.
And I supported President Trump, and he has done so many things that have gone far beyond, frankly, what I could have hoped for. He has kept the promises he made, and that goes a long, long way with me. He hasn't done anything that he didn't tell us he was going to do, and he has protected religious liberty. He's probably been the greatest pro-life president that we've had in my lifetime, quite frankly. And then you just look at the justices he's put on the Supreme Court that are originalists, who understand their jobs to interpret the law, not to make it. That's the job of Congress. And so he's got our economy moving again with his policies through the tax cuts and regulations being rolled back. So on so many angles, I think we all have to pause and just say, look, we don't agree with the lifestyle that the president has lived in the past. And frankly, I would not say things the way he says them at times. I'm not Donald Trump Jr. There's already a Donald Trump Jr.
Yeah.
And there are things that I cringe. I think sometimes he steps on his own agenda with perhaps some of his tweets. But I do believe this, and I will go to my grave believing this. I believe that at his heart, he genuinely wants what is best for America. And that means a lot to me. He is not a politician.
Yeah,
he's proven
great point.
That.
Yeah, absolutely. It's a great point. So let me ask you this question. I'll let you go real quick. If Mark Harris in Congress, as the new congressman from the 9th District of North Carolina, could lead one effort in Congress to do something that would impact the entire country, what would it be?
Wow. You know, I'll be honest with you. When I look at where we are as a nation, and I look at my children and my grandchildren, and I think about their future, I would love to be a congressman that is going to, it's not the, the most exciting issue in the world, but I would love to be a congressman that will be known that I stepped in and was willing to take on this national debt and begin to get our fiscal house in order and begin to. But to be honest with you, that one is so critical to our future from a national security standpoint, an economic standpoint, and just for the well-being of our children and our grandchildren. And so I think we've got to take on that issue,
Amen.
And I want to be a leader in fighting for it.
That's a great answer. I couldn't agree with you more, Mark. And we don't elevate that conversation to the moral level that it should be at. But I know that you will do that. And we'll continue to pray for you. MarkHarrisForCongress.com, the 9th District of North Carolina. And we've got our prayers. We're praying for you, Mark. And I look forward to visiting you up in D.C. after you get situated up there. But I appreciate you, brother. I love you. And I've got all my support is right on you.
Steve, I love and appreciate you and your family. And please, come see us in Washington if God places us there. And I thank you for all of your support. And I'm so proud of how God's using you day in and day out in the lives of people across America.
Thanks, pal. You're welcome. Have a great afternoon. We'll talk to you again real soon. Mark Harris, Pastor Mark Harris, soon to be, God willing, Congressman Mark Harris, 9th District of North Carolina. Down there in show, if you're listening in Charlotte, we're on the radio in Charlotte, and down kind of going east, you travel along that state line between North Carolina and South Carolina. That's the 9th District, and I can tell you personally for knowing Mark now for 14 years and the impact he's had on my life, of all the people that I could pick, that I know personally, that I could pick to put in Congress, Mark Harris is the guy. He's the guy. I can't say much more. I really couldn't say any more than that. And so just pray for him. If you want to check out his website, MarkHarrisForCongress.com. With a minute and a half. Okay, so I'm going to do this. So Evan is my intern, my production assistant, a whopping turning 16 today. But we're not, we don't say, and Evan and I agreed to this, we don't say sweet 16 when it's a guy. Because that's just wrong, right? We're both down. We're thumbs down on the Sweet 16 thing. So it's 16, which is awesome. Happy birthday to Evan. And do you want me to sing a regular happy birthday song, Evan? Or do you want to hear the now infamous Steve Noble birthday dirge? You want to hear the birthday dirge. Okay, so I have to get the right face on. And then this, because it's a dirge, right? This is kind of a depressing thing. So here it is. Happy birthday. Happy birthday. Pain and suffering fill the air, people dying everywhere. Happy birthday. Are you moved? Are you feeling excited? I don't even know where I learned that, but I'll do it in my classes that I teach on Thursday with all these high school homeschoolers. If somebody's birthday comes up, I'll ask them. I don't think I've ever been asked to sing the regular happy birthday song. Everybody wants to hear the funeral dirge birthday song. And I have to compose myself. If you're on Facebook Live, you were watching that, because I'm laughing and we're laughing about it. Then I kind of have to, and then my face just kind of goes blank. And then I do the funeral. Happy birthday, Evan. Evan's doing a great job. He's been with me for a few months since our previous friend, who's awesome himself, Callan Toscano, who's now at the University of Virginia. And hopefully I'll get to hold on to Evan for a while because he's so stinking young. Even though he's just turned 16. That's awesome. I love being able to spend time with these young people who are trying to walk the road and follow Christ and impact this country. Boy, do we need them for our future. This is Steve Noble. It is the Steve Noble Show. I hope you have a great weekend. God willing, I'll be back on Monday. How about thank you, Jesus? Praise the Lord. on the air live all hour today. It looks like all of our technical stuff has been worked out. Thank you, God, for that. And so, God willing, like I said, I'll see you guys on Monday. And like my dad always said, ever forward.